Are you really digging for peace? Or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that you really wanna know real behind all the stories they told. The cicadas don't lie, they scream but they know Russ don't forget.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Hell, y'all are presumably still y'all. Y'all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. It's a big day today. I'm recording this on Saturday, and I'm recording it during the day. You can tell it's a little bright outside. But today is me and Miss Rachel's anniversary. 17 years. My life changed long before September 6th of 2008. Long before that day, I ran into this girl who she carried every promise of a good and worthy life if only I could be a man good enough to earn her love. 17 years. 17 years don't feel near long enough to hold all our stories. All our adventures, all the laughter we packed into late nights and long roads. Still, it was on this day that we were married 17 years ago. On this day, we came home from the Venetian Hotel in Vegas. We got married at the Venetian. We came home just in time to ride out Hurricane Ike. Holding fast to one another. Storm on the outside, no match for the peace we had found within each other. I love you, baby. You're everything beautiful in my life, every joy, every victory, every single ridiculous moment worth remembering is because of you. And here's to the next 17. May we cram them just as full with laughter, with adventure, with love that only grows wilder with time. Love that girl. Y'all just don't know, man. Maybe you do. You've been around a minute. That's why I'm filming this afternoon, because we're gonna cut loose, have us a little fun tonight. We're going to get turned up. Just kidding. I'm 48. I don't get turned up anymore. When I say turned up, that means three or four bourbons on the porch, listening to all our favorite music we love to listen to. And that's about the gist of it, but it's a pretty good night. You know, one of the times in our early days, before we were married, Rachel used to go on a lot of the road trips with me, you know, when I'd go out and do comedy and stuff. And I can never remember where we were coming back from on this particular trip. I think it may have been Texarkana. Maybe. That's a possibility. I think it was Texarkana or Shreveport, coming back and doing the funny bone there or something. We was in her Mazda. We was bebopping on the way home, and we were probably about 3 hours from the house, and Rachel's mom called us because some of her friends in Galveston, she lived in West Texas at the time, but some of her friends in Galveston had told her that the bioluminescence was running. And if you don't live near a coast, you may not be familiar with bioluminescence, but it's, and I'm going to screw this up. I should have looked this up before I talked about it. But it's some kind of bacterias and whatnot, what gets in the water. It's not harmful to you, but they kind of glow. It's kind of a crazy thing. You swirl your hand through the water, and you can see them glow, and they light up the water. Maybe they're phytoplanktons or something. I can't remember. It's some kind of little organism. Anyways, it happens every great once in a while. Even rarer in Galveston, because water's usually pretty dirty down there. Her mom called us. She said, man, I don't know where y'all are at, but you ought to get down to Galveston. There's bioluminescence in the water tonight. It was probably 6-7 o'clock by that point. We were still a couple hours away from the house. And we decided to take us an adventure. And we called up my buddy Steve and my brother Joey, said, hey, man, we're going to go down to Galveston and see the bioluminescence. You ought to come, too. we're going to go get us a room at the Flagship Hotel. Now, the Flagship Hotel was this big, beautiful hotel, and it was out on the water, right off the seawall. It was on stilts out over the water. You had to drive out there to it, and it had this big, beautiful mermaid imagery all down the side of it, and it was kind of a, it was a landmark in Galveston, Texas for a number of years, not unlike the Balinese Room or other various landmarks in that fun little town, but it was one everybody knew. Everybody knew the Flagship Hotel, and so. And at that point in my life, I had never stayed at the Flagship Hotel. I'd been there a couple times for prom parties and stuff like that, but I'd never stayed, never had a room at the Flagship Hotel. It was a little out of my price range as a young man. I didn't come from Katy now. That's why we decided to get us a room at the Flagship Hotel. We was going to go down to the Flagship Hotel. And Joey and Steve said, hell yeah. And they got in the car. They headed down there to meet us. And I figure we got down there about 9 or 10 o'clock. And we must have spent 2 or 3 hours out there playing in them waves. Right there in Galveston Beach in the dark, watching the bioluminescence swirl around us, drinking, having a good old, having a good kind of time that only young people can, where you're not too worried about tomorrow. Hell, we had no idea then that 17 years later we'd still be here in Houston. But we suspected we'd still be in love. We did. We played in that water all night, and then we went and had some drinks and went to our room, had us kind of other fun that young people like to have, especially those in love with each other. And it's just a fantastic memory that rolls around in my brain. It's just one of those, it's one of, when you need a pick-me-up, I think about that night, how much fun. And that was back when we were still friends with Steve, and before a lot of the group friendship drama came along, split everybody apart. It was just a different, younger, easier time. And I think about that when I think about my anniversary, because when we come back from Vegas and Ike come through and hit Houston, Ike wiped out the Flagship Hotel. I mean, just knocked it. I got pictures. We went down there and took some pictures of it. Just knocked it to pieces. And for Titta, who owns most things on Galveston Island, built the Pleasure Pier out there. And the Pleasure Pier was a mock-up. It's supposed to be kind of a mock-up of an older Pleasure Pier that was there at one time way back in the day, back in Galveston's Mafia day. Boy, you want to go down a, you know, you guys know I love James Lee Burke, one of my favorite authors. But, and he's touched on it a little bit, but Galveston's one of the most fascinating places in this whole country when you look back at its history. And a lot of people don't, when they hear the word mafia, they don't associate it with the South, but we had a lot of it down there. Dallas was mostly Italian and Greek mafia running a lot of the businesses there. Galveston at one time was just all mafia business. Like it was the Maceos and the Fertittas, and, you know, Fertittas won. Clearly, you know, New Orleans was a hotbed. Atlanta, it's interesting stuff to read about. And before that, the most interesting pirate in the history of all pirates is John Lafitte. And John Lafitte basically created Galveston. That was his no holds barred pleasure hideout, hangout, stash spot, whatever you want to call it. It baffles me, you know, in all the movies they remake, all the crap that they remake and refeed us, not one person sat there and going, man, if you read John Lafitte's life, that's one of the, but that would be one of the greatest movies anybody's ever, it's already written. All you got to do is transcribe it and film the sum of it. Maybe I ever get me in one of them rooms where they give me an opportunity to decide about something's being made, maybe old John Lafitte comes to life. That would be a hell of a story, hell of a film, and something nobody's seen yet. Anyways, I'm in a good mood. It's my anniversary. Sorry I'm being a little rambly. I'm not sorry. Y'all come here to listen to me ramble. And one of my favorite things to ramble about is that gal and all our adventures and good times together. Some of the other stuff I'm going to talk about in this episode wasn't necessarily a good time for us. It was a time of struggle. Not in our love, but time of struggle financially, hardship, that sort of thing. But it's an interesting story, and it's got some fun twists and turns. And if you stick around to the end, I got to tell you, we're going to unwrap. I got two big old boxes that sound like big old boxes of Hot Wheels. And then I got a box from longtime podcast supporter and listener and longtime fan, Kieran Kinsella, over in Ireland. And Kieran sent me some. So I have to crack these boxes and check them because, unfortunately, there are devious people out there. And there's people that have different senses of humor than the rest of us. And occasionally somebody tries to send me a glitter bomb or something like that, thinking they're going to be funny. So I take all these packages back behind the garage, crack them, open them away from me, just in case it's going to bust. And I've had two. I've had two people send malicious packages like that. And that's why I have to do it. So I had to crack Kieran's box. Knowing Kieran wouldn't send me anything malicious, but just, you know, I have a routine. And what I saw inside that box has got me so psyched. I didn't get to pull it out and really look at it. So I'm going to save that. We're going to do that together later. But I'm really psyched about it. So I hope you stick around for that. Let's do some quick sponsor copy. This season of The Wrecking Yard is brought to you by absolutely nobody. Sponsor-free, church. Just black coffee stubbornness and a loud-ass portable air conditioning unit. But hey, if you're a brand, a business, or a rich uncle with a guilty conscience, there's room at the table. Slide in, sponsor The Wrecking Yard, and remember, all ships rise. You know, I was in business for a long time, and I've been in a number of different businesses. I've had a number of jobs in my life. I've worked for a great number of men. Worked for a few women. And some of those men have been crooked. This ain't the first crooked man I ever done business with. Might be one of the last. It was like at the end of this one, I kind of finally learned my lesson about dealing with these sort of fellows. And hopefully in sharing my tale, maybe you find something in there that relates to you. Maybe you've owned your own business. Now, this happened about 2018, and longtime Wrecking Yard fans know that that was after I had to split my business from another real crooked son of 50, old Paul Russian. Guy got busted for all the child stuff, and boy, I had to get away from that fella. That's a couple things I don't tolerate in people. That's one of the big ones. I think most people feel that way. But it's wild. You hear stories every day about people. Just recently, a man who I considered a friend for a number of years, we weren't super close, we had spent a lot of time, but we'd been in this industry together for a number of years. We've worked together a number of times. We've broken bread a couple of times. And some recent allegations have come out about this man that, to say it's disappointing just barely scratches the surface. And I'm a string them all up once you find them guilty, because I got no use for that mess. But this is right about the time, this is right after I broke off with Paul, and I had to basically restart my business. I called it Superior Structural Services because I like alliteration. And man, can I tell y'all a dumb story about, oh no, that was a different time. Doesn't matter. I called Superior Structural Services. I was leveling houses, doing foundation repair, also doing some remodeling stuff for people, some of my old clients who knew me from my remodeling days and would call me up for little projects. Of course, still working for Mr. Bob all the time. Mr. Bob even tried to warn me about this fella. He said, Mr. Bob told me in the beginning this deal sounded hinky to him. told me to keep my head on a swivel dealing with this fella. He had read some things and was concerned about getting in too deep with this guy. Now, one of my old clients from the April Point South days was a lady named Deborah Ducin. And me and Deborah Ducin, boy, we got along just about as well as two people get along. She was an artist. I always liked her. She's a cool chick. Been married to a race car driver for a long time, so she was real hip to racing. She had one of the big condos out there with all these multi-level floors and crazy high ceilings. And she had a bunch of damage to her ceiling. Nobody could figure out how to get up that ceiling and fix it, because even a 16-foot ladder wasn't going to do the trick. And I come in there with my crew. Actually, I didn't even have a crew back then. It was just me doing everything. And I built some scaffolding that would have made an OSHA employee faint. I built some scaffolding out of 2x4s and timbers in her house in modular. I would design a piece of it, build it, bring it in there and assemble it, kind of a modular design, so that I could get up there and redo all the parts of her ceiling where the roof had leaked and damaged her ceiling. Ended up repainting the whole ceiling, taking care of it. And she was so impressed because they done sent so many people over there and told her they didn't have a ladder tall enough, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't going to be a quick, easy thing for them, so they didn't want to do it. Anyways, over the years, she would call me for little side jobs. And then for a period of time, she had a son named Corey Ducin. And I always liked Corey, man. Corey's a good kid, you know? He's a little rough around the edges, but he was a good kid. Corey's the kid I always think about when people tell me, when you hear guys talking about, oh, they bought a car to attract women, that kind of stuff, or I got this truck, women love this truck, that kind of thing. Because that's weak sauce. If you need a good-looking vehicle to pick up women, then there's something wrong with your game, son. And Corey was living proof of this. Corey was a good-looking kid, but he was a good-talking kid. And this is the kid, he could be in the passenger side of my pickup and see two girls in a new car and, by God, talk one of them into giving him a ride somewhere. And before you know it, he'd be dating that old gal. You know, like, he was just, kid had game. He was a good kid. I liked him. One time he bragged that he was the greatest lighter thief in the world. He was always, everything he did, he was the best at. And, you know, you after a while listen to that shit out of somebody, you start screwing with them. And so he didn't know he was in the truck with the greatest lighter thief in the world. And so over the course of the next 2 weeks, I made it a point to steal every lighter he had. And at the end of the 2 weeks, I handed him this bag of about 20 lighters that I had lifted off him in 2 weeks. Just to screw with him, because he was sitting there in that truck with me and Josh telling us what a great lighter thief he was. You know, he's just one of them dudes. He always had a line of shit, but he's a good, hard-working kid, man. Dude would get down. I mean, me and him had to work on some plumbing behind a Mexican food restaurant one time where their wastewater was going nuts and leaking everywhere. And we had to get down in about a 4-foot deep hole in, I don't know if you can imagine Mexican food wastewater. They had an odor, the level of grease to it. And we were down there in 4-foot deep water working on these pipes underwater. And bro, he's a trooper. That kid was working some 50, man. I liked that kid. That was Deborah's kid. He worked for me for a little while. Just good hand, good hand. I always liked the kid. He went on to bigger and better things, and he's one of those I couldn't be happier for him. I'm glad he did. He always, he was real good at flipping cars too. Kid was good with cars. He turned me on to Fallout New Vegas, one of my favorite video game series of all times. He was playing it and was telling me about it, and he found out I liked the Dark Tower series by Stephen King. He goes, dude, if you liked reading that series, you're going to love playing this game. And so I went home, downloaded Fallout New Vegas, and it became one of my favorite gameplays of all time. It's still, right, it's up in the top three, I guarantee. Anyways, old Deborah calls me out of the blue. I said, what's going on, Deborah? She said, well, you know, I finally moved out of April Point South. I was like, oh, well, I'm glad to hear you got out of there. I know the place was going crazy after we all left. She said, yeah, I just couldn't deal with it anymore. The new board, they were tyrannical, being little nuts. She said, I decided to, she'd been talking about it for a long time. So 2009, 2010, maybe even a little earlier than that, tiny houses became the thing. All of a sudden, there was all of these dudes was trying to build tiny houses, trying to figure out how to make money with tiny houses. And she said, I bought me a tiny house. And I know you level houses and stuff, and they had an accident with the house, and it's not level, and I wanted to see if you'd come out and fix it, because the guys could kind of give me the runaround that I bought the house from. I said, sure, you know, I'll come out there and take a look at it. Where's that? She said, it's right over here by your house off 1093. I forgot what it was called, Butler's Ridge or some crap like that. And what it was old RV park right there on Lake Conroe. But this fella had started paying somebody local in town in Conroe to build him these tiny houses. And he had another little spot called Fisherman's Cove. He'd already put some of them up and was renting them out. People come up there fish and stuff on the weekend, go kayak and that sort of thing. Fella named Bill. Miller, Mitchell, some shit like that. Anyways, she said, come on out here and take a look at us. Yeah, I'll come over there. I ain't got a lot going on right now. I'll come check it out. If it's something we can fix on the spot, we'll fix it on the spot for you. At the time, I had this job going on in Livingston, which was like a two-hour drive away. So I was like, I'll come out on Saturday. And if it's something we can fix on the spot, we'll fix it on the spot. Nothing she told me could have prepared me for what I was going to find when I got out there. Because it was indeed a tiny house. And what they were doing is they was coming out there and setting these tiny houses on this pad, on these RV pads, gravel RV pads. Some of them were paved. Cinder blocks, or just like you'd level a home. But this fella had just dumped the house off a tilt bed truck onto the ground. I mean, the house was on the ground. It was not, there was no amount of anything that had been done to it yet. It had a couple blocks and a little bit of cribbage under it, but it was the house, you could tell something had happened to it. It was just twisted up. I mean, just walking up to it. And them little houses are pretty stiff. They don't do a lot of... The whole point of those tiny houses are supposed to be built a little bit better than how they frame up a new house. But what happened is when everybody got in the tiny house craze, all these runaround builders and oil field guys that decided they were home builders started throwing these tiny houses together, same way they'd throw a quick little builder neighborhood slab on grade stick frame house up. Well, it doesn't equate when you got something that's got to travel. It's got to be moved and set and everything. And so there's a lot of low-quality tiny homes when this first started. A lot of them were just, these guys that didn't understand it was a completely different process than what they'd been doing. And that's what you find problems like that in builder stuff all the time. You find a builder who's real good at building these little three-bedroom, 1,800-square-foot homes. And then he gets a little money in his pocket, and he decides to go after a wealthier client, and he starts trying to build these 3,000, 4,000 square foot homes, and his crew they haven't done this. They're not good at it yet. And he'll have all kind of problems with that first run of homes. And if he makes it through that, he might have less problems on the second run. But I've seen builders go under left and right because of this, tackling, biting off more than they could chew, quite literally. I digress. We got out there, this house is nine kinds of twisted up. I can tell by the peak in the roof that the whole backbone of the house is twisted. I'm not sure there's any amount of concrete blocks that is going to fix what's been done to this home. And that guy we can't get him out there on the site. The guy that she bought the house from had it moved out there, the guy organizing the whole deal. But he says, he tells me over the phone, do whatever you got to do. Charge me for it. I'll pay for it. Well, the man had a big business and, you know, was clearly developing real estate. I assumed he was good for the money. This is how these kind of guys work, though. They're always good for the money up front. They do that to build your trust. And then once they built your trust, they start asking for more and more, and then they leave you high and dry somewhere. And this is a similar story. So I walk around this house, take a look at it. I said, Deborah, we're going to do our best, but I can't tell. Something's happened to this house. Something more than somebody sliding it off a tilt bed. Either this house was built wrong, something is gone awry here, but I'm going to do the best I can for you. Deborah was an old client and a friend. Me and my guys get out there. We order some cinder blocks, good quality cinder blocks from the 84 lumber, the kind I like. We start leveling this house, doing our best. I got old Joel working with me at the time. Old Joel's a pretty good hand. Joel read a level just about as good as anybody, you know. He had an eye for leveling stuff. He was good at it. I had Joel on the inside, and we're jacking and blocking. We get this house up. But, hell, man, because of the slant of the pad, the back end of the house is about 5 foot off the ground before we can even get the thing close to level. And that still puts the front of the house only about 8 inches to a foot off the ground, you know? It's not an ideal setup. Like, we're going to do hurricane strapping on this thing, you know? And I don't know if y'all have this in other places. I know in tornado places you got it, but here in the Gulf, close to the Gulf of Mexico, we have to do hurricane strapping. And what it is, I had my drill, my big auger, Franken auger I had built. I had made an attachment and welded it onto a bit, and it would screw in these anchors. They're about 3-4 foot long, these auger-style anchors, and it would use that hydraulic auger, screw that anchor into the ground good and tight, and then it had a bolt mechanism and metal strap, and you hook the metal strap on the inside of the frame of the home, wrap it over and down, and then you crank that thing down there with that bolt mechanism, tied it up. It's a pretty permanent solution. Works wonders. I've seen many houses ripped apart, but the hurricane straps were still there. So we hurricane strapped the hell out of this thing, just to make sure, because I didn't like the fact it was sitting so high in the back end. I didn't like going that high. And we built some nice block cribbage for it, everything in the back. I felt secure about that. Used high quality blocks. But see, a lot of people go out there and buy cinder blocks from, you know, one of these little, big box stores or whatever that. Those are real low quality cinder blocks. I mean, cinder blocks are just fly ash, basically, anyways. They're not real strong. When you see somebody karate chop, break a cinder block, I can't do it. But I'm just saying it's not as impressive as it sounds, you know, depending on how they break it, because you can hit a cinder block in the right place with a hammer and break that sucker clean in two. Real easy. I too many times had to tell my guys unloading them off the truck, hey, be careful, bro. You cost me money, because they're breaking blocks, throwing them on the ground and shit like that. But I like to buy them thick ones, real strong ones, had a small diameter hole in them. Sometimes we use the solid blocks. So we had solid blocks on the end of that house because how high we had to go with it. And I just felt better about them solid blocks. And we strapped that booger down. But that house still wasn't right. It was still as level as I got the doorways. Things were just tweaked and twisted in that house. And nobody seemed to have an answer about what the hell had happened. Just that's how the guy delivered it. And I told her, I said, I'm going to have to charge this guy, but your house still ain't right. It's still, this house needs, sometimes I have to come in here and redo that whole, the rafters. This house was just jacked. There wasn't nothing square in the house except the two doorways we had managed to get level. But everything else in the ceiling of this house was just torqued and twisted. And you could just tell, it was more than a leveling issue. Something had happened. Well, we finally get old Bill over there at the property. He comes out there to bring me a check about a week after we'd done the work. And she's hot still because her house ain't right. And she's got Bill out there to look at this house. And I worked with a structural engineer all the time. I told Bill, I said, boy, I call Ernie DeLuca to come out here and look at this, but he's going to tell you the same thing I'm going to tell you. There's something inherently wrong. Either this thing was framed wrong to begin with or something bad happened to this. And Bill finally coughed up the story about what happened with that house. Bill called this old boy out of Temple, Texas. Bill kept trying to find somebody to move these houses. Couldn't ever find anybody reliable around town to move these houses. House moving's a tricky business, and there's only a handful of companies left that ain't good at it. And he gets a hold of this old boy out in Temple, Texas, who gives him the deal he thinks he wants, which translates to cheaper than shit. And this old boy in Temple, Texas is going to come out here. He's going to pick up this house on a slide truck. He's going to bring it all the way from Conroe up there to Willis and mount it on this pad for him. And so what happens, old boy from Temple, Texas comes over there with his truck. Turns out he don't have a CDL. He don't have no kind of permits, no kind of nothing. He hasn't cleared. Yeah, I mean, there's all kind of steps you got to go through when you move in a house. He hadn't done none of that. He decided it was a tiny house, wasn't that big deal. Well, for a tiny house, this was a pretty good size house. Had a second floor to it, like a loft. Apparently, they get it all loaded up on his truck over at the place because they got, a sled underneath it, lifted up, loaded on his truck with a forklift, big forklift. No problem. But he didn't bother to check the height clearance. So he just takes off through Conroe about 8 o'clock on a Sunday evening with this house. And lo and behold, starts hitting hanging lights, traffic lights and shit with this house. Not only that, had to go somewhere he had to go through. It was low clearance. He hit something with the top of the house. They said when he pulled up at the RV pad with the house, there was a string of about 18 sheriff cars behind him and a fire truck, and he still had traffic lights hanging on the house when he pulled up there that he had yanked. Traffic lights he had yanked down with his house. And that's what twisted the piss out of that house and everything. And Bill come clean on that story. Deborah turned around and looked at him. She said, I need a new house. You ain't pawning this off on me. And Bill, of course, assured her his guys were going to come in and fix it and all that stuff. She said, no, I didn't pay for something to be damaged and then fixed up. That's not what I bought. I bought a new house from you, and that's what I want, is a new house that hadn't been damaged. And she had to go back and forth with him. Finally, he gives her another lot and another house. Who knows who he pawned that damn house on? After his guys fixed it, he had me come out there and check the level on it one more time and adjust it. Of course, he recognized that I was knowledgeable. He says, hey, man, I'm doing this in a couple places. I got a couple up of property. I got Fisherman's Cove up there. I got this place out here. I got this company building me these tiny homes. Do you do moving? I said, no, I don't do moving. I don't want nothing to do with that. But I know this house mover over here who's a good house mover, and I recommend him to you. He says, all right. He gets with the house mover. He says, well, I'm gonna move all these houses out to these spots. I need somebody to come out and block them up and level them up. He says, especially these ones we're doing over in the preserve. We've already done a couple of them, but the preserve is a floodplain. He said, these houses I need 4 or 5 foot off the ground. I said, boy, that's a tall order. The blocks. It's not the best idea. I said, you're going to have to hurricane strap shit out of everything, and you're going to need solid blocks. He said, no, we can do it with center blocks. We got a guy that already does it. I said, well, I guarantee you that. I said, I'll be damn surprised that passed inspection. I'll be damn surprised. If it's me, I'd use solid blocks. But, I ain't trying to tell you how to do your business, Bill. If it's me, I wouldn't trust my investment on cinder blocks, especially if I didn't know where them cinder blocks is from. Well, Bill kind of shooed me off. He said, prices were a little high. I said, no problem. I understand. Went on, start doing something else. Wrapping up that big job in Livingston, boy, I get an old call from old Bill again. He said, you know, this other guy that I got out here blocking up these houses and stuff, he just ain't cutting it. He's way behind, and I'm just not sure they know what the hell they're doing. Anyway, you come down to your price a little bit. I said, so you hired a guy that don't know what he's doing. You want me to come down on my price to help you fix that? And that don't sound right to me. It didn't sit right to me. You deserve a discount because you thought my prices were too high to get it done right to begin with? But sure, now I should give you a discount. Boy, you're out your monkey ass mind. I said, no, Bill. I said, I ain't lowering my price. I said, oh, actuality, some of those houses your guy already did, I might charge you more because I might go out there and fix whatever he effed up. It's the way this thing works. Well, we go back and forth. Bill finally decides to hire me on to do some of this stuff. So I go out there to that Butler's Ridge place and level a couple of them houses for him. They's had somebody else do, and they're all screwed up. Crappy-ass cinder blocks under them. I make him pay for new blocks. We don't have to do solid blocks on those because it's not as high and they're smaller houses. Of course, none of them are strapped, so we got to strap them all. And I kept probably about 200 of them metal straps in the back of my truck. I always had that machine with me. Time I was working out my little Z71, but I also... Was I still working out the Z71? Man, I might have had diesel by then. I might have had that daggum Duramax by then. Anyway, I always had my machine with me. The machine was my money. So we strapped all them and everything. I hit him up with an invoice. And about a week later, I get paid on it. All right. But he complains about the price, and that's... Somebody complains about the price after you've already made a deal always bugs me a little bit. Like, we done shook hands and agreed on this. And I charged most of my customers deposits, but because he's a big enough company, I assumed that he's good for it. I didn't charge no deposit because I'm a foolish, foolish man. Comes back. Hell, it might have been a couple weeks later. So, you know, I got all these houses out in the preserve. I had this guy start doing them. Inspector's got some problems with the guy's work. Insurance people have some problem with the guy's work. They want me somebody out here that's insured, so I sent him all my insurance and everything. So come out here and see what you... This one, I had Gabby and... Joel had already left at that point by the time we got to this stage of the job, but I had Gabby and rest of the crew and... Gabby is sharp, boy. Gabby knew what worked, what didn't work on them houses. And we go out there to look at them, about five houses this other company's already done. I found out also that he ain't using the moving company I recommended. He's found some other fly-by-night cheap guy that's out there just dumping these houses on the ground with very little cribbage under them, which makes our job harder because now we got to dig holes to jack these things up. Or use airbags, and my airbags were just, I had some older ones that were in bad state of affairs. I didn't like using them too much. I didn't trust them, mainly. And I always liked the old school, man. I prefer the jacks. I had them good-ass jet 30-ton jacks, and them 30-ton jet jacks, you just couldn't beat them, boy. And they were easy to rebuild when they went bad, and I always had a couple kits in stock so I could go through there and change them O-rings in them and whatnot, change oil out of them. Them old jet jacks, they were just as smooth as you wanted to be and they never faltered. I trusted them jet jacks. They were high dollar, they didn't come cheap. Well, we run out there to look at these things. We get to, this guy's got these houses 4 or 5 foot in the air. With, I mean, you know, in a 20-foot span, maybe 4 block sets. Like, it's just not enough block sets. See, these tiny houses are still heavy. And very few block sets on the inside, on the, you know, in the interior of the floor plan underneath. Just real sparse. This guy was clearly trying to save money on his blocks. I called old Bill up. I said, man, I'll be honest with you. I don't want to touch these houses with a 10-foot pole. What your guy has done here is dangerous. I don't trust none of it. And if you want me to do it, I'm going to redo every one of them. We're going to do them with solid blocks, and we ain't going to do this kind of thing. Bill, no, no, I just need you to fix these and strap them down. I'll have you do all the other ones fresh. I said, I ain't touching these things unless you let me redo them, Bill. I just ain't. I don't trust what's been done here. You can fart on one corner of these houses and the whole house moves. I don't trust what you've done. I don't want my name attached to none of it. Bill said, come back out Saturday. I got inspector coming out. He's going to check them. You and him can agree on what's got to be done. Well, I knew the inspector. I ain't going to say his name here, but he was a good hand. I met this guy. He worked for an insurance company. I'd run into him before on other job sites. Got out there, saw it was him. I was glad. He's a bit of a stickler. Now, the problem is these tiny houses, there was a lot of free room with what you could do. There was a lot of loopholes. So there wasn't a lot of governing regulatory data that could limit what you could do with these things, which made them dangerous. Every Joe Blow could be out there building them and doing whatever he wanted to do with them. And sure enough, that's what had happened here. But I'll never forget, they had one of these houses out there, and six blocks high. What was that? Six times eight, 48 inches. About 48 inches, you know, 50 inches with shims and stuff. That's you know, that's 5 foot in the air. That's a lot of space underneath the house. Not near enough block sets. This first house we go look at, I'm just like, boy. And the inspector said, I ain't crawling underneath that thing. Not for no amount of money. Not for no amount of job. You soon as talked Jerry into climbing under. I said, boy, I ain't climbing underneath one of these things. One of the things them old inspectors used to do, this made me laugh. I still laugh about it, thinking about old Bill's out there, and he's got some old gal that works in his office out there with him, and they're trying to tell me about all this work they're going to send my way if I can help them fix this problem. And I told him again, I said, there ain't no fixing this problem. It's just redoing it. And it's going to be a tricky one to redo because I don't trust the way it's sitting right now. Old Bill climbed up the ladder, jumped on the front porch of that house. I said, boy, you are out of your mind. He said, I'm telling you, this thing's solid. You can see the house moving. I said, man, I don't know what you're looking at, but you are in danger. Get off that day. This is not the time for bravado. You're in danger, sir. I had a healthy respect of falling at that point because I'd done falling off a roof on my head. Old Bill comes down. He's still arguing me and that inspector about it. One of the things my old inspectors used to do, and one of the things I always did with my guys, when my guys got done shimming a house and blocking a house, I'd go around and kick the shit out of every one of them block sets. And if that block set moved, you got to redo it. I want my block sets tight. That's the man that taught me had done the same thing. And I'd had plenty of my block sets kicked out from under a house I had to go fix. And sure enough, that old inspector walked around the back of that house. He said, well, there's one way to test it. And he kicked one of them stack of blocks on the back of that house. And we heard it. Gabby was over close to the other side of the house, the downhill slope. And I hollered at Gabby to run, but Gabby was already moving. Gabby heard the sound too. There was a clink. If you've heard cinder block break, you know what that sound sounds like? A creak, like a little grinding clink. And all of a sudden it was followed by a bunch more creak, 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 creak. And the house started swaying a little bit, and all them blocks that start creak, 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 creak. And we all jumped back, and that house just sort of cracked all the blocks on one side and fell cockeyed with the front point of the house pointed down into the ground and the back end of the house still up in the air, just teetering. You could literally, the way it fell, you could walk up this house and push it with your finger and make it teeter. And Bill said, good God almighty. What'd you do? He said, hey, what I did is what the people you hired did. That's what I was trying to tell you. This day you were up there jumping on that thing like a fool. This ain't no good, brother. We didn't do nothing. It's the guy you hired did this to you. You got to figure out how this got to be fixed. Bill said, well, that deal we was talking about earlier. I said, oh, no, this one just got way more expensive. Now I got to try to figure out how to get it back up on its side. You know how hard it's going to be to jack while it's cockeyed like that? Like, this one just got way more expensive, brother. He said, well, I got to get this thing up. I can't have people coming out here and seeing this. I said, well, I wrote him up an estimate. I said, just for this one. And I said, the rest of these been blocked up like this. I'll write you up an estimate to fix them. Redo them solid blocks. And he shakes my hand. He agrees to the estimate there on the spot. In front of Gabby, in front of the inspector. I said, I'm going to need a deposit on this one, though, because I got to put a lot of money out ordering these blocks. And I got to have all these blocks delivered out here. And I'm about to put out some money, Bill. I got to at least have it in deposit to cover them blocks. I'm so glad I did that. We agreed on, wasn't my normal 50% deposit, but we agreed on deposit. I called over there at 84 Lumber, ordered all the blocks I want, had them sent out to observe. Total, there's about five houses. Six. There were six houses at the time. Two of them had not been blocked at all. They were just on the ground on some cribbage. I said, we'll do them last. I said, we got to fix this bad one first. Boy, we had a time fixing that block because it still had all them crumbled blocks underneath it. And we would have to, we set up jacks and poles to keep it tilted on its side so me and my guys could get under there and clean all them crumbled blocks out, just rake all that crap out from under there. And I just throwed all them blocks. You tell that the guy had left his Home Depot pallets out there. I knew he ordered them blocks from Home Depot. Those ain't the right grade, but it's fine for your garden project. You don't want to put a house on them. I ain't knocking Home Depot. It's good for what it is. But when it comes to really building something, you need to go to a builder supply, a real builder supply. I had an account, a good relationship, 84 Lumber. I'd been doing business with them a number of years at that point. I liked their product. That's what I worked with. Lumber, siding, all that crap I got from them. Yeah, we kept that thing tilted. We cleaned it out. And then we had to lower it about 6 inches at a time, real slow, until we could get it almost level. And then this is on a tilted pad, too. I mean, it's just the whole environment's bad. I can work with different grades. I've done plenty of that. That's not a problem. But it's a tough environment to work in. Well, we tilted it, and we got the other side of that house jacked up, me and the guys, and we got that one straight. Hurricane strapped the piss out of it. Bill pays me the remainder for that house. I feel pretty secure at that point, but he's just one of these guys. Every time he talks, you feel yourself checking for your wallet. I just don't trust the guy at this point. But, you know, sometimes you got them dollar signs in your eyes, you stop thinking about the right things. And I needed that money. I needed that project at the time. Business was a little slow. I was starting over. Boy, just one of them decisions you make sometimes and you end up regret it. And I said, all right, I'll do the rest of these houses for you, Bill. And me and my guys start going out there every day. We're gonna knock these other five houses out. Boy, we see some crazy stuff. One of them houses, the way it was blocked up, and we got out to it, Gabby started laughing. He said, hey, Faye, come look. And we go over there, and you could grab the corner of the porch on the house, and you could twist the house on the blocks. It was so cantilevered and oddly balanced on these blocks. You could just twist that house on its outside blocks because the few blocks you put in the middle was too high. Some of them were just wild, man. We was out there probably a month working on them houses. Some of them took a lot of work to get right. Some of them were, the two they set on the ground, we did those in a day, both of them. But them ones that were cantilevered and done weird stuff with, boy, they were work. When we hurricane strapped everything down, we got everything right with them houses. Bill comes out, he's going to do a final inspection. Of course, all of a sudden, he's nitpicking about this and that. I don't like the way you, can you move that hurricane strap closer to the house? Because we're going to do, you know, all this kind of stuff. I said, I have to put the hurricane strap where there's good soil. And a lot of these pads are pure sand underneath them. There ain't no good soil to attach to. So I have to get out here and some of this better, some of this clay and whatnot, get a better. He wants them moved anyways. So we whatever. We move hurricane straps, all his little nitpicky shit. So I guess I can come by your office Saturday, pick up that remainder check. He said, let me move some money around. It's going to take a few days to get. It was a substantial sum at that point. I think he was into me for about 12 grand left over at that point, 12, 15 grand. I said, well, Bill, usually my money's due at completion of work, but we've been doing a little business together. I'll give you some grace. I do need to get paid on these. I got a bunch of payroll to make. This, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I'm gonna get you. No problem. Okay, Bill. Well, it comes about a week. I still ain't heard nothing from Bill. So I call him a couple times, leave him a message. Boy, he don't answer the phone. Nothing like that. Boy, I called him about 4 or 5 times at this point. He finally picks up and he goes in this diatribe about how he had an engineer out there who said, all my work is wrong. It's all got to be redone. I said, who's the engineer? He don't want to tell me. I said, well, I work with a state engineer, state license engineer, civil engineer. I bring him out there to look at them houses. If he's willing to write you a report on them, certify them as good, I think we can just not care about what the other engineer's got to say unless he wants to come out there and argue his points in front of my engineer. Well, I don't know all this necessary. Just bring your engineer out there. So I get Ernie out there. I pay Ernie to go out there and look at these things. And Ernie's happy with everything I've done. Only thing Ernie bitches about is the hurricane straps I moved into the sand for this idiot's wishes. Oh, Ernie. Ernie didn't take no shit off here. Ernie got mad at Bill, yelled at him a couple times. Said, I want to know who this other engineer is that told you all this is wrong, because I'm about to file a complaint with state licensing board against this guy because he clearly don't know what he's talking about. Boy, all of a sudden, Bill can't remember that other engineer's name or even who he's affiliated with, boy. I said, boy, I'm getting a hinky feeling now. Here we go. We're on the ride now. Here we go. Bill says, call me Monday. We'll get all this straightened out. Call him Monday. He wants to know where Ernie's report is. I said, I ain't give you Ernie's report till you pay me, because I had to pay for Ernie's report. And that, you know, that cost me a good little sum of money. And Ernie gave me a deal on it because we were friends, but still, you know, that was $1,500, $1,600 out of my pocket to get that report done. I said, I'll give you that report when I get my money. Or I'll bring you that report when you got my check ready. All right. Just call me in a couple days. I have the check ready. Boy, I call him a couple days. He ain't answered the phone. I don't get no call back. I said, boy, this crooked bastard. Well, his office was right over there at Fishman Cove, right there by my house. I drove by it every day. I started looking for his old pickup truck, and he had a real nice, fancy pickup truck at the time, brand new F9000, whatever the shit, F350. Boy, the truck wasn't ever there. Well, the preserve was about an hour away from my house, out there in Cleveland, Texas. I said, well, I'm gonna guess I might drive out there, find out what this is. Well, I drive out to the preserve, drive around, and there's another company out there leveling houses. So I stopped and talked to old fella. And I could tell they're kind of a loose organization. And I tell the guy, I say, you know, I'm trying to get my money out of him for all this work I already did, and he ain't paid me. And guy said, well, if you pay me, there's going to be a whole bunch of problems out here. I said, yeah. I said, I reckon I feel the same way. I'm about the point I'm ready to start causing problems about all this. In fact, I'm about to get on the phone. I had a little lawyer I used in Conroe for stuff. Or if I had to put I didn't have to do it a lot, but if I had to put a lien on somebody, I had somebody I used. I said, boy, I'm about to call his lawyer and see what's got to be done here. Well, lo and behold, after that, my truck seen driving around there at Preserve, I get a call from old Bill. Come over here to the office Wednesday, I have your check. I said, man, come over there. We're about a month out now. We'll get over to his office. Well, for whatever reason, he's only got half my check, and he's got a big story to go with that. I said, Bill, I can't wait on this money anymore. I'm going to go ahead and file a lien, all this work, and you just keep this check, pay me when you pay me the whole thing. No, Jerry, come on, we ain't got to operate like that. I said, oh, we ain't got to operate like that, but I know you already got another company out there leveling these houses, so it's clear you ain't planning on doing no more business with me, and it feels like you ain't planning on paying me for the work I already done. I don't like that feeling. I got seven guys out in that truck. They ain't happy either. Because I'm having to pay them out of my fresh earnings right now, and it's taking me a little more time than I like to take paying my guys. Which wasn't true. I just told them that. I already had everybody paid up, but they was all sitting out in the truck looking menacing. Bill said, no. Come by tomorrow. I have the full check. Well, I don't know who Bill had robbed to pay me, but by God, boy, I got there the next day, and he had my full check. And I said, all right, Bill. Take my check, but I ain't going to do no more business with Bill. Done. Bill's one of those clients that when I walked away from the business, sold all my stuff, was one of the clients that honestly, was a driving inspiration, that decision. Might say he was my divine light, that I was tired of dealing with customers like that, and by God, there just seemed to be more and more of them every day. I'll never forget that house falling off in my... I seen that happen a time or two, but I never seen it happen to somebody kicking a block. That was the funniest shit I ever seen in my life. Boy, it made a noise. We had hell getting that one level after it was all torque. Because these guys he had building these homes, I don't think they was real good at building tiny houses. I think they were probably good at building slab-on-grade, stick-frame, cheap builder homes. Boys, maybe about a month later, old Deborah Ducey calls me. She says, you ain't going to believe this. You got to come out, go over there at Fisherman's Cove, see what's happened. I said, what do you mean? She said, Bill done pissed. You told me Bill screwed you around with that money. Well, he done pissed that other company off. I guess he didn't pay them neither. I said, oh, hell, I got to go see this. So, boy, I hopped my truck. I run over there to drive by Fisherman's Cove and these guys have hurricane strapped Bill's truck and Bill's trailer to the ground and tight. Oh, springs are compressed. they'd unstrapped his fancy truck, his trailer, everything to the ground. I guess he also had a bunch of materials out there for a bunch more houses he was about to do at Fisherman's Cove. And they had hurricane strapped all them materials to the ground. And just everything out there was hurricane strapped to the ground, bro. If you've ever dealt with them hurricane straps, you know they are a pain in the ass. Somebody had run around with a grinder and cut all that shit loose. Boy, I laughed. Couldn't happen to a nicer person, Bill. You had that one coming, I suspect. Also made me mad I didn't think of it. That was the funniest thing I ever seen anybody do to anybody. I'm glad I got my money out before it all come to that. But by God, boy, he must have pissed that other fella off. I know some of those developments are still out there, people living in them and stuff. I'd sure be mad if I paid a tiny house price for one of them tiny houses, I tell you that. I'd sure be hot. Because they weren't selling them cheap. They were 60, 70 grand. You know, tiny houses are crazy expensive now. But that's because most of the good builders that are building them, they know what they're doing. And though it is a smaller house, there's a lot more what goes into it. Do it right. We'll wrap up there this week. We'll do some testimonials. We'll unwrap some packages. Now, thank you guys for tuning in every week. At the beginning of a new season, numbers always drop a little bit, and that's okay. We lose some people, and we gain some people, but I appreciate those y'all that tune in every week. I appreciate those y'all that show up to the live chat, want to chit-chat and talk. Do me a favor. I always forget to ask y'all guys this, but please like and subscribe to my channel. I always forget to ask that. You're supposed to ask people to do that. Please like the video. Just click like. Take a couple seconds. Subscribe to the channel. Chances are you probably like the other stuff I do anyways, and that's about all I do on this channel. It's a kind of a combination of everything. You're going to be in the, if you're in East Texas, I got two shows coming up in Gladewater, Texas, Jackson's Theater, September 19th and 20th. I'd sure love to see some of y'all out there. I love seeing my Wrecking Yard people at the shows. We have a deeper connection, and I always appreciate that. I appreciate talking to y'all after the shows. Of course, I always do a meet and greet after the show, hang out. I'll have my Diamond Gem certified stickers in case you want some of them with me. Getting ready to do some hats and some shirts. I finally found a shirt brand I like. I'm wearing one of my new shirts today. This is a shirt my lovely wife got me. It's a Singer Salvage. It's from there's a TV show called Supernatural I always liked a lot. And in my mind, Bobby Singer was the most important character in that whole story. Bobby Singer had him a junk, had him a wrecking yard. And boy, Bobby Singer, he fixed souls and cars and just kind of my hero. I like old Bobby Singer. Balls, bunch of idiots. All right, let's do some testimonials now that I've bored you with the boring stuff. Jake of all trades, master of fun, our old buddy. Smurfette Jake isn't me, but another Jake who appreciates you as much as I do. I'm sorry, that's my bad. I got y'all mixed up. My wife was the blonde with the daddy's girl tattoo. Oh, that's hilarious. Bro, I laughed about that all the way back home from Chicago. I'm still laughing. That's one of the funniest things I ever heard. Makes me feel better about some of my experiences. And y'all were a hoot. I really enjoyed meeting you after the show, bub. Also, thanks for coming out, man. Both of the Jakes. Oh, there's our girl. That's Cinnamon Girl 76, our old buddy Amy Ayers. Big heartfelt thank you to JW and the Wrecking Yard Podcast congregation. The universe heard your thoughts and prayers. I've had some positive happenings come my way this past week. Love and gratitude, Amy Ayers. Boy, I couldn't be happier to hear that. You sounded a little down in the dumps in your last letter, and just made me sad because you seem like a really, you seem like a light bringer, like a person, a positive light in this world, and I hate to ever see a positive light getting their flame diminished by the negativity of others. Happens to me sometimes, and boy, I hated hearing it happen to you. So I'm glad things are turning the corner for you, Miss Amy. At LMJ420, you're growing up, Bubba. This trip, it was JW going to visit, not Jerry, not Jerry Wayne, not even Pooh Bear took this trip. This was all JW going back to show the land how he's grown, and the land was trying to show you that y'all have grown from each other, and there is a purpose to that growth. I picked this comment because I've read it out loud to myself about 15 times in the past week, Ellen. It really, sometimes the things y'all say stick in my head, and this stuck in my head, and I couldn't quit thinking about it. I'm working on the book right now, and I crashed a little bit after going back home last week. It made me feel sad in ways that I hadn't felt in a long time. And I crashed a little bit, drank a little too much this week, and just was having some big ass feelings about it all. And this comment kept grounding me. I kept thinking about it. I wasn't Pooh Bear. I wasn't Little Jerry. I wasn't Jerry Wayne. She's JW. Going back to look at this. I think he was realizing this little postage stamp piece of land, post stamp sized piece of land. I just had all these feelings tied to it. And it's like, it's not yours. It's somebody else's now. And I'm real happy with the person who's got it. I've told y'all my cousin Jimbo has it now. And hoping we go up there and do these shows in a couple weeks. I'm trying to line it up so we can load the Volkswagen up and get it out of there. And hoping my cousin Jimmy will let me walk around the shop a little bit and just have a minute before I say goodbye to that place for good. But I think it's time. The wrecking yard ain't there anymore. The wrecking yard's here. The wrecking yard's here. The wrecking yard's in y'all's hearts. Wrecking yard's in this old garage. Wherever the hell I am, that's where the wrecking yard is. Thank you for that comment. It's like I said, it stuck. I've read it a bunch this week, and it really, it helped me on a piece of the book I'm writing right now figure out how to explain some things, and I just really appreciate it. It stuck with me. Let's open some packages. Let's see here. Got the old knife of freedom. Let freedom ring. I would not just be a nothing. My head all full of stuffing. My heart all full of pain. Life would be some merry things. Would be a dingleberry if I only had a brain. Well, this is an interesting looking package. Oh, there's no note in here. Let's hope there's one inside. Does it say anything out here? It says Susan M. Kelmer out here, so I don't know if that's who sent it. But I don't think so. Let's keep digging. Well, by God, that is a mess of Hot Wheels. That's just a bag full of them. A bag full of Hot Wheels right there. What did I say? We're at about 790, so let's do this. That's a 796. $7.99. Oh, that is a cool ass one. Look at that. Radical Wrestlers 1959 Cadillac. That's bad as hell right there. Ooh. Hope the right kid that appreciates that gets that one. All right. What did I say was that? $7.99. We're going to break 800 today on the wrecking yard. There's 802. There's 805. 808. Damn, those are cool. These are all really cool ones. Not that they're not all cool, but I mean, these are some exceptions. Oh, I have this one, that 59 Impala. I got one just like that in my collection. What did I say? 808. This is 811. Oh, that's kind of a cool one, too. Little Chevy 1500. What's that? 811. Three more on that. That's 814. 814 smiles we're going to give out. Still no damn note in here. If you sent these, please reach out to me and let me know, because I'd like to recognize you. That was a 24-pack. Put us at 814 smiles we're going to give away. By God, let's see what's in this box. Thank you, whoever sent them. I'd sure love to know who you are. Oh. Woo, doggy. Holy cow. Well, that gum. That's a big box. That is two 50 packs. There's smiles right there. From James Damick Potts. Hope I said that right, James. James, thank you so much, man. This is too cool. So what did I say? We 814? 914. We almost 1,000 smiles for babies this year. We almost 1,000 smiles. Like I said before, kids ain't got a lot to smile about. Thank you, James. God bless y'all. God bless y'all to pieces. God bless y'all. Set them up there right now. I might have to rearrange the pile to get them all fit now. 914 smiles. We so close to 1,000, I can smell it. God bless y'all. Even if we don't win, 914 ain't nothing to sneeze. That's a lot of joy. That's a lot of joy, y'all. Y'all bringing to the world, man. That's my favorite thing in the world. You know, I spend most of my time trying to figure out how to make people laugh and smile and feel better about themselves and feel better about the struggles and crap they're going through, because I just know how hard it is. I've been to some low points in my life. And if I can help somebody else get out of one or feel a little better about what they're going through, my God, that always tickles me. Last but not least, our good friend Kieran Kinsella from all the way in Dublin sent us this package. And by God, Kieran, I can't wait to show this off. Got a letter here. Dear Jerry Wayne Longmire, this package is a belated birthday gift for you. I know you're a Fallout fan. I was just talking about Fallout. And I made this Nuka-Cola crate for you. I weathered a little to make it look a little more authentic. Also enclosed is an Ireland trucker's cap and some die-cast cars. I know you like Mopar, so I got you a Dodge Dart, and the Irish have a connection with the DeLorean company as they were built in Northern Ireland. You can keep them or give them to the Driven Dreams charity. I'll leave that up to you. I'm a big fan of your podcast and look forward to hearing it every week. I'm rooting for you. Keep up the great work. If you're ever in Dublin, let me know. We can go for a pint or two. Your friend and fan, Kieran Kinsella. And he drew a cartoon about my caveman selling the wheel a bit. That's fantastic. Thank you, Kieran. Thank you so much. Let's look at what Kieran sent. Oh, God, I'm a sucker for a good hat. Look at this bad boy. Made in Ireland. Ireland original heritage. Brian Boru. Brian Boru was born in Killaloe, County Clare in 941 AD. He was known as the Irish King who ended the domination of the High Kingship of Ireland by the Ewe Nil and probably ended Viking invasion domination of Ireland. Brian first made himself king of Munster in 978 AD. Then it goes on to say a bunch of other stuff that I'm going to try. I might have to read that later. It's very long. Boy, let's check this out. That's a fine hat right there. I have just a tiny, tiny little sliver of Irish heritage. And most of mine's Scottish, but there's just a little, if you look at my pie chart, there's a little 30% Irish heritage. But I do, I had family that lived in Cork County that I've founded on one side of my family. I always wanted to go there and see that place. I'd love to get out to Ireland sometime. Sure love to have a pint or two. I don't leave stickers on hats because I wear hats, son. Boy, I already sized my big ass head too. Look at that. That's a good looking hat there, Bubba. Thank you, brother. I love that. What a beautiful thing, man. Let's see. Happy birthday to me. What we got here? Pretty and purple. Look at that, honey, right there. 68 Dodge Dart. That one might have to go with my private collection. Nah, we'll give them to the kids. Look at that little art car DeLorean. That's cool as hell. Thank you, Karen. That's right up my alley. I did not know the DeLoreans were made in Northern Ireland. That's interesting. You're going to send me on a rabbit hole of reading. Let's get to the main event. Look at this bad boy right here. I told you I peeked. I seen this already. Look at that. Tell me how cool that shit is, man, right? Look at that. In fact, I just saw a dude on the internet somewhere that makes some vintage-looking Nuka-Cola bottles. I'm going to have to maybe order me a couple and set that. Man, we might have to replace the Coca-Cola box with the Nuka-Cola box because that's just right up my alley, son. Thank you. Thank you so much, Karen. This is a beautiful, beautiful gift. Thank you. I will treasure this for a long time. It may have to go in my office because I just like looking at it so much. Hell yeah. Set that right there for now. We decide how we're going to display it. Well, that was fun. We'll get back over here off the comments page and we'll wrap this honey up today. Appreciate y'all being here. Appreciate you sharing your Sunday with me. The most important thing, the most valuable gift, I've said it and talked a little bit about it a week, is to give somebody your time, and you guys give me your time every week. And I like sharing time with y'all. There's an old English proverb that says, if you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. And folks will argue it's from the Bible, but it ain't. Closest you'll get in the Bible is there's actually a Proverbs. And I don't remember what it is, but it's basically, if you walk with the wise, you'll be wise. If you run with fools, you'll get yourself destroyed. That's the truth. But it all comes down to this. If you know somebody's dirty, if you even suspect it, you can't tie yourself to them and not end up filthy. You can't swim in a sewer and come out smelling like roses. You can't sign your name on a deal with a liar and not see your own name stained. I knew better with Bill. I should have known better. I felt it in my gut the first time that slick here came at me with his fast talk and crooked grin. I felt it and I ignored it. And it cost me time and money. And most of those developers and contractors up there was crooked as a ram's horn. And I should have walked clean away from a mess up. Wasn't long before I did, before I left that whole business behind. Because I'd rather be broke and honest than fat and dirty. I'd rather sleep light on an empty stomach than heavy on a guilty conscience. And I carry that into this business too. And entertainment's full of snakes and new boots, buddy. I mean, there's clubs I won't step foot in again. Comics I won't share a stage with again. And that's fine. That's more than fine. That's me sticking to what I believe these days. Took me a while to get that. But you got to guard that little piece of yourself that's still good. You got to grip it tight, polish it, wear it like armor. Because it's the only way you'll ever stand in front of a mirror and nod your head and say, yes, I'm all right. I wasn't always there. You guys know. I've told you many, many stories. I don't mind admitting when I was in the wrong and owning that sort of thing. And I know some of y'all been there. You've had to cut ties, walk away, maybe even learn the hard way. Maybe you got burned once or twice. That's fine. That's life. We don't flog ourselves for the past in here. Wrecking Yard ain't about what's broke down behind you. It's about what you can rebuild from what's left. That's what the Wrecking Yard was always for. Right here, right now. Me and you. I'm rooting for you. There's room at the table for everybody. I'm JW, and I love you. Nine hundred fourteen smiles. Well, that just tickles me. I got a new sticker to add to the sticker wall. Young man come out and brought me some stickers from his unit. Combat Medicine Branch. Train, sustain, save lives. And it looks like it's got a howling coyote or a red-eyed chupacabra on there, but I guess he's a medical chupacabra. He's out saving lives. But we're gonna add that one right here to the sticker wall before we get out of here today. If I can peel the sticker. Are you really digging for peace? Or is that just a lie tale? Sure that you really want. I would while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. Life would be so merry, things would be a ding a day. If I only had a brain. See, I got Adam Harmon, one of his tattoo stickers. I got two of his tattoo stickers. Got a Mobile One, Twin Mill. Mobile One, Legislature, Hot Wheels Legislature. Of course, Diamond Jim. My sticker from World of Outlaws, Final Stampede, Devil Bowl Speedway, last night they ever run sprint. Last time Devil's Bowl Speedway ever run races. Ford truck sticker, one of y'all sent me a while back. Another little Mobile One Pegasus, another one of Adam's tattoo stickers. Now we got a little unit sticker there. We'll just keep adding that as long as we got room. I love you guys. Thank y'all for being a part of this. This has turned into something I never could imagine. We're sanding the book with fine grit, and it's taking on the life of its own, and it's going to be something even more than what the podcast was in its own way. Catch you guys. Y'all be safety. I'll catch y'all next week. Or is that just a lie tale to help you